Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a program of conversation and readings with local and regional writers. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
My guest today was born in Willows. Sherry Edwards was a columnist for the Sacramento Valley Mirror and the Willows Daily Journal. She's published two books based on her columns, As I Remember and Still Remembering. After her husband Ted passed away, Sherry Edwards wrote about her personal journey, and her newest book, Sometimes Memories Are All We Have, became part of her healing process. Sherry, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I was interested in who you thanked at the beginning of your book, because I don't know that I ever saw a bookstore owner thanked, but you said Heather Lyon at Lyon Books and Learning Center, who cares about local writers. I thought that was nice.
She does. She does. She's wonderful. And I have all my books there, and she does a great job for local authors.
And then after you thank some other people, you say, finally, my fellow writer, Daniel Thomas, for his continual moral support. And I thought this was so interesting, the way you and Daniel's lives began and then took separate directions and then came back and crossed paths again.
You're right. Daniel and I met in kindergarten. And because I lived in a small town of, we had 100 people that graduated from high school, most of us were still together after all those years.
In
but
fact,
then we both went away, and then I was lucky enough to find him again.
Well, in fact, not too many years ago, I actually went to a reunion of my kindergarten.
Ah.
I mean, because we had stayed together through high school, too. And when I looked around, there were the people from that I had known since kindergarten. Mm-hmm. You have a chapter in your book called Daniel. And why don't you start? How do you start that chapter, Sherry?
It's called Daniel. I woke this morning with words tumbling in my head. A story, actually. It's been a long time since words pushed in and begged to be written. I sleepily reach for the pen on my nightstand. Memories. Memories of a childhood friend named Daniel.
And you go on to say that as you got older, you and Daniel, I don't think you ever dated, or you say you probably didn't even dance with each other as far as you recall.
I tried to remember when we danced together, and I don't believe we ever did. But we were always aware of each other, and I found him to be really sensitive and funny, and I liked him a lot. And I went to Chico State. I believe he went in the service.
In fact, why don't you read that part of your book when you pick it up again? Where you went off to college?
I went to college, married, moved away, then married again, became a mother, a teacher, a television hostess, and finally a writer. I returned to my hometown after years of being away. It was at a class reunion that I again saw Daniel. We didn't seem to find time to talk, but the whispers I heard were, Dan is a writer. He's written a wonderful book. That got my attention. As a fellow writer, I wanted to see Daniel's book and talk about writing, but for the next 5 years, I was consumed with health, illness, and eventual death of my husband, friend, my father, and my husband. The thought of Daniel and his book was sitting on a back burner in my writer's brain. Unknown to me, Daniel had also returned to the area we had grown up in. Finally, in 2006, Daniel and I were reunited. I cannot recall the exact day, hour, or minute that two former classmates, two now writers, who grew up on the same streets, attended the same movie theater and football games, connected. It was at another class reunion we sat at the same table selling books. We exchanged books, and I fell in love with his writing. I found it strangely similar to mine in style, sensitivity, and locale. Through his book, I discovered that Daniel had remarried also, had been a teacher and school administrator in the same town I had lived in for many years, strangely never running into each other. Our children might have even attended the same schools, We have so much to remember and to compare. It's overwhelming to me.
You're listening to Sherry Edwards. She's reading from her book, Sometimes Memories Are All We Have. And Sherry, I had the pleasure of meeting Daniel because, as you tell, he is a writer. And so I got to meet him because I interviewed him after some of his books that he wrote. And he is everything that you say that he is.
He is.
He's a delightful person.
He totally is.
So Daniel is a part of your life when you were a child, and the two of you grow up in small towns, and you make your way in the world and come back. And I think that's why the internet is a popular place nowadays for people kind of in our age group that wonder about these old classmates. And you didn't have to go on the internet.
I didn't have to go that far. I just had to go to class reunion. And he is definitely a part of my life. He is my muse. We encourage each other. And we both are now really happy putting out our books.
Well, I mentioned that this book came about when you lost your husband.
Yes.
And writing this book was a part of your healing process.
Yes.
So why don't, in your introduction, you explain what happened and when your husband died.
Okay. On December 17th, 2002, my husband Ted passed away, leaving me behind in a world I had not faced alone in 25 years. I went into the desert, into a cave. After several years of not being able to write, I suddenly awoke with words in my head, words that pleaded to be put onto paper. I laughed out loud as I grabbed a notebook from the nightstand and my hand raced across the page. The dam that had held back my emotional torrents could hold no more, and words started to flow down the spillway. I had decided that my next book would reflect my walk alone and my personal healing process, but I soon discovered that after sharing 25 years with someone you loved, that was not possible. So please bear with me as I occasionally return to a sweet memory with Ted at my side. Apparently, Ted's spirit intends to be with me always. I am determined to think about what I have, not to think about what I have lost, but what I had. Everyone who walks the earth has to face the loss of a loved one, so my journey will be recognizable and familiar to those who take this book in hand. It will be a reflection of my personal journey into a desert of loneliness that seemed unbearable at times. The struggle was daily. It was the people who loved me and shared my life that led me to each oasis. I drank deep from their wells. It was the world of nature and the simple view from my window each day that helped me to see the circle of life. Finally, it was reaching for the hand of God that took me from pain to peace. My prayer jar overflows with thank yous. My new book, Sometimes Memories Are All We Have, is taking shape. And as usual, it's writing itself, sometimes without me.
You know, Sherry, that's one thing that I noticed about your book, that you have, there are a lot of losses in your life.
Yes.
But your story is hopeful because you explain how you get past that. You know, in fact, I mentioned that you wrote a couple of other books before.
Yes.
This one.
Yes.
And when I looked at the cover of your first book, and there were dates on there, collections of newspaper columns, volume one, because you have a volume two. And I noticed the dates and I thought, well, why does it stop at October of 2001? And so I read and found out, oh, because when you work for a newspaper nowadays, you're not the only one that this happens to.
That's right. I learned that twice. I learned that.
Well, explain to people why this book ended at that particular date.
I lost my job. It's a really interesting story because I began writing with a writing group of about 10 people when I came back to Willows to take care of my father. And in that group, they encouraged me to take it to the newspaper. And when I did, John, the manager, said, well, you know, I'll take it home and look at it. So he did, and he called me the next day, and he said, Sherry, I really like these, but we can't pay you. And I went, oh, okay. So he said, well, would you maybe do a couple pieces? And I said, sure. So after a week, he called me back, and he said, Sherry, we have to pay you. So I was paid a small fee for up until a point in time where they decided that they could no longer pay for it. And I had to make a decision. I could write for free, but I was taking photographs and I was using my own car, and I felt like, you know, maybe I needed to be compensated.
At least reimbursed for
yes.
your expenses.
And so I was without a job. It was shortly after that Ted ran into the second manager of a newspaper in town.
This is while your husband was still alive.
Right. And Ted said to him, he said to Ted, does Sherry have a job? And Ted said, no. He says, she does now. And so I began again, and I wrote for 3 more years. And that in that time, that's when Ted passed away at the end. Mm-hmm. But I also, they also ran out of money to pay me. And so I was out of a job, but people came to me, and there were notes and letters going to newspapers saying, we want her stories. So they said, write a book. And so Ted mm-hmm. said, of course, write a book. So I wrote 2 books. And those are more, they're more, to me, they're more oral history. Mm-hmm. Each week I would come up with a story that I remembered from growing up there.
Yeah, because it is about your life
growing up.
And I might remind people that the first book was As I Remember, and the second volume is Still Remembering.
Right.
And you have personal stories in there.
I do.
And I really love those stories mm-hmm. too. But this, your newest book, Sometimes Memories Are All We Have, is a much more personal book.
It is. It is.
For that reason, I think it will touch people.
That's my hope, that they can relate to the mm-hmm. stories in here, and that they know they're not alone. Yeah. That was really important to me, that they know that someone else has experienced the same thing and survived.
How you got through it.
I
hesitate to say got over it, because losing your husband or your father.
Nancy, you'll never get over it.
Yeah.
But you learn to live with it. Mm-hmm. You do. Mm-hmm. And so.
Well, we've been talking about your husband, of course. You lost your husband in December of 2002. And that was at the time you were writing for the newspaper.
I was.
But then, shortly after that, you lost somebody else in your life. And you mentioned that you had returned to this area in the North State to take care of your father.
My father had Alzheimer's, and it was getting difficult for him to take care of himself. Ted and I had planned to retire in Canada, and it was Ted's idea that we come back home and take care of him. So we did, and he lived only a year after Ted died, and so I had that second loss. And my dad was a great hero in my life. It's through a lot of his stories that I began to think that maybe I could write stories too. So he was a great influence in my life.
Well, those of us who read your book come to love your father too.
Yes, they do.
There's you mentioned, you call this chapter in your book My Inheritance, mm-hmm. something that you inherited from your father that I think would surprise people. It's not what usually people inherit from their parents.
It's an unusual gift.
It is an unusual gift, but you say this little character became rather well known in the Willows area.
He did. Many people knew.
I would love for you to read that chapter about a crippled crow.
Okay, this comes, my book is in sections, and this comes from a view from my window. It's about nature. My inheritance, a crippled crow. I've waited an entire spring for my friend to come. Even though I knew in my heart she would not be coming, I refused to accept her absence and searched endlessly for her every single day. But each time I looked in one of her special locations, she was not there. She was my dad's friend before she was mine. I had watched from my window next door as she and Dad established their deep friendship. I knew that once that Dad saw her deformity, she would be locked in his heart forever. Dad had a soft spot for orphans and the downtrodden souls of our planet. In the beginning, she stood at the far side of his yard on her one good leg, the other curled, disfigured foot held up off the ground. Dad would watch her from his perch on the front porch. Both sat mute, observing each other. It became a pattern every afternoon. They would take up their position and watch the other's movement, Dad leaning heavily on his cane each time he rose, and her limping across the yard in search of food. Some days, Dad would place some bread crumbs out for her, but she never moved toward them until he was out of sight. Then she would cautiously approach, snatch the bread, and fly away into the tree across the street. That continued for several months, with Dad adding more scraps to the plate he had now provided. It was one day after breakfast that Dad cut up his leftover pancakes and hobbled out to deposit them in her dish. She swooped down from her perch in the big cedar tree and landed close to him. She sat still as he returned to the porch, and then flew back into the tree, repeating her trips until all the pancakes were gone. From that day on, I never saw her to be shy around Dad again, and he spoke softly to her whenever she came to eat. I noticed when the weather grew very hot, she would disappear and then return in the fall. Dad told me that he believed when she finished raising her babies in the tree across the street, she would go out into the country, perhaps alongside the river, to get cool. I observed Dad and his little friend for 4 years, she coming like clockwork, he waiting patiently for her appearance. She was always alone, just like Dad. Their behavior was as constant as the seasons. Then in the winter of 2003, Dad left this life, and I inherited his home and his friend. When spring came, I waited for her arrival. I wondered, will she come? Does she know Dad's not here waiting for her? Just when I was ready to accept the fact that she wasn't coming, I saw her sitting on the rooftop next door watching me pull weeds. I could see her deformed foot curled up beneath her. She called to me. We watched each other for a long time. I finally rose and rushed into the house to find the ingredients for pancakes. I've never been good at making pancakes, but I read and followed the recipe on the flour container. They weren't perfect, like Dad's, but I made them, put syrup on them, she likes syrup, and returned to the yard. Glad to see she was still there, I placed them in her dish. The next day I went to the store and purchased a pancake mix. I whispered to her, "Dad's gone. It's just you and me now." And so for the next 5 years, we forged our friendship. I expanded her menu. I bought volumes of nuts in the variety packs, but I found she would always leave the Brazil nuts in the bowl. So we would get almonds, walnuts, peanuts, and of course pancakes when I had time to make them. I guess in some ways, she had an easy life, with Dad keeping her plate full every day. She was very possessive about her dinner bowl. She would stand her ground, angrily squawking and flapping her wings until an invader went away. Over the years, I watched as she came and went. I watched as she moved her children, too big for the nest, out into the world. On the telephone pole in the backyard, I watched as she tried to teach them to place their nuts on the top of the pole to crack and eat them. I noticed they weren't quick learners, often dropping their nuts to the ground and having to retrieve them. I found her to be a lady of courage, resourcefulness, intelligence, and a nurturing parent. She would raise her family and then let them go. When the days got too hot, she would stand still in the grass, mouth open, panting. Then I would find she had gone to a cool place, and I stopped making pancakes. Some years when she arrived late, I would agonize that she wasn't coming, and then one day, there she would be, calling to me from the wires across the way, announcing she was back, and where were the pancakes? I remember clearly the year my husband died. The following spring, I watched for her. It was near his birthday in April when I first saw her, just sitting in the yard. I felt a special joy in seeing her, as if Ted had sent her back to comfort me, a kind of messenger. She called repeatedly to me, and I spoke back to her, telling her of my loss. I looked forward to seeing her each day. This year, 2006, I waited as usual. I examined every bird that came into the yard. She did not come, but still I waited. Still I watched. Today, June 19th, I know she is not coming. I know in my heart she is gone. Apparently, the end came to her in winter, as it did for Ted and my dad. But I am reminded of her each time a little pecan tree sprouts up in my yard. Pecans were her favorite, and she hid them everywhere. I wonder if she was thinking of the day Dad and I would not be here to take care of her and her children. A box of pancake mix, another reminder, will sit in my cupboard unused. But I like to believe that Dad was there waiting for her with a huge pecan and a plate of pancakes in his hand. Again, waiting for his friend, Cripple Crow, to arrive.
My guest is Sherry Edwards. She's reading from her book, Sometimes Memories Are All We Have. And her unusual inheritance from her father was a crippled crow. Sherry, you mentioned you lost your husband. You lost your father, and he lived into his 90s.
My father was 94.
Yeah, 94.
94.
And you lost your mother, though, much sooner than that. And that was interesting, too. Something very interesting happened the day that your mother died, and she died on a very special day of the year.
She did.
I'd like for you to read that story, and the title of this story is The Clock.
My mother was only 65. The Clock. The Clock. Let me get this straight. The clock on the wall in my parents' living room stopped at exactly 12 noon on February 14th, 1976. It stayed at that high noon position for 25 years, a dark reminder of the exact time that my mother passed. Daddy refused to let anyone touch that clock, so it became a constant reminder of a sad day in my life. For Dad, I think it must have held a different memory, one he was not able to let go of. I seldom write of my mother, but as Valentine's Day approaches, I think of her and that clock. The clock is now gone, along with my father. A new pretty antique clock decorated with hand-painted pink roses sits in its place. The round face is set with Roman numerals. It chimes, telling me when to come and go. But the old wall clock is pressed deeply into my mind. We never spoke of the fact that it stopped at the very moment my mother took her last breath. We just quickly tucked that occurrence into our hearts. I live in my parents' house, and mother would be proud of the way it now looks. The colors are warm and soft. It is full of the colors she loved, yellow, pink, mauve, and cream. It is in order most of the time. Mother wanted a place for everything and everything in its place. I seem to have inherited that characteristic. I don't do well with too much chaos. Many of Mom's collectibles decorate the cabinets and shelves. She loved angels, so there's always angels in my house. There is comfort in knowing that we shared the same view as we washed dishes or lay in bed on a starry night. I know that her hand touched the doors of the cabinets that I now touch. When I mop the floors, I know that Mother and my Aunt Elizabeth spent time on their hands and knees scrubbing that same floor. But it is that clock, stopped at 12 noon, that is the resident ghost in my house. As I sit at night watching Jeopardy, just as my mother always did, I can sometimes see that fancy gold-colored clock, the reminder of that Valentine's Day 29 years ago that Mother left us at exactly 12 noon.
My guest is Sherry Edwards, and she's reading from her book, Sometimes Memories Are All We Have. And her book is, there are stories about her own memories, but I know I found myself identifying with a lot of the memories you have, and yours, your descriptions of them brought all these memories back to me in ways that I hadn't realized. It's so vivid. But this experience of your mother dying at noon on Valentine's Day is quite unusual.
It's unusual, but I don't think our family ever
felt it was.
It felt it was, because she was a lady of celebration and holidays. And I think if she had a choice, she would have picked that day to leave.
You know, just like Harry Houdini died on Halloween.
Halloween.
Your mother died on Valentine's Day.
Right. Right.
And the clock stopped exactly at that moment.
It did. And it stayed that way. Every time we'd come home, we'd look, and there was the clock, 12 noon.
So you lost your mother when she, from this point of view, seems young, mm-hmm. too young to lose your mother.
Right.
And you then lost your husband, Ted. Mm-hmm. Shortly after that, you lost your father in his 90s. And in your book, you do say one chapter is called A Wrong Turn. And I think people would identify with that, too, because so much of your life is, in spite of a loss, you overcome that, you go on. And even with that wrong turn, it made you appreciate your husband, Ted, all the more.
Yes, it did.
And what a special person he had been in your life.
I truly did. It took a long time for me to get through much of my grief and to open myself up again. And then I had a wrong turn situation in my life. But I think the experience was not totally a bad thing. Mm-hmm. I always loved Ted, and I think it just made me appreciate him all the more.
Well, we mentioned this writing is a part of your healing process from the losses that you experienced, mm-hmm. the writing the book, and you mentioned nature. Now, we haven't had a chance to hear some of the, we heard your relationship with this wonderful crow, but some of your descriptions of your garden and the flowers are all made all the more poignant because at the end of that chapter, in a small note, you say, at the point you wrote this chapter, you didn't know but what you might lose vision in one of your eyes.
That's true. I had some surgery on one of my eyes, and something went wrong, and it was possible that I was going to lose my sight in that eye. And fortunately, that didn't happen, but I went through a year of not knowing.
Yeah.
And so I guess it did make me appreciate the things that I was seeing more than other people might be.
Or I think those of us who read that, and we just read this chapter where you have these beautiful descriptions of the flowers, and we think, oh my goodness, I should not take for granted this gift that I have of being able to see all this beauty in nature.
Right. My dad also taught me. I mean, my dad and I spent tons of hours. He would call me in the evening or late in the night and say, sis, come and look at this moon. And so we would be outside looking at the moon. He loved the moon. And so he had a great respect for nature. And I think I gleaned a lot of that from my father. Mm-hmm.
Nature was also a part of your healing
process.
It was
a very big part of my healing. My bed was near a window, and my back garden was there. And I think one of the most spectacular views I saw, and it's strange that Danny had a similar view, I looked out of my window, and it was about 4 in the morning, and the moon was shining on a newly popped up daffodil, and I love daffodils, and it was just so magical to me. And Daniel had told me he did the same thing with a rose in a garden once, so I said, oh wow.
Yeah.
So
In your book, Sherry, mm-hmm. in the dedication to your book, mm-hmm. you say that you dedicate this, my final memoir book, to my tribe. Your final memoir book? Are you sure about that?
No, I'm not sure about that. I thought it was at the time. But stories are just so much a part of me. They are just this morning or yesterday morning, I wrote 2 pages. They're just there, and I can't stop them. And it's possible that there will be more memoirs.
Well, we're happy to hear that, those of you who enjoy your books. Again, the book that we've been talking about is Sometimes Memories Are All We Have, and the cover has in sand a large heart, and that plays such a role in your book for so many reasons. Thank you, Sherry.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
I'm Nancy Wigman.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. Our theme music is The Mysterious Barricades by Francois Couperin, performed by Warren Haskell. Nancy's Bookshelf is a production of North State Public Radio.